This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I'm an accountant by day, so a few hours ago I was sitting on my computer typing on a 10 key, and now I'm standing in front of you guys, just finished 14 and a half minutes of NHL hockey.
Did you get any advice before you went out?
I don't think I heard anything other than put your helmet on, and then, and now I'm standing here.
You see Joel Quenneville just laughing as you were getting on the ice?
I think I would too.
Sometimes in sports, the story, the drama, overshadows the result. Obviously, Winnipeg Jets fans prefer to win rather than lose. They lost on Thursday night 6-2 against the Blackhawks. But the story of Scott Foster, emergency goaltender, coming into the game, not getting scored on, 36 years old, that's just a hell of a story. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you. On this Saturday morning, we're going to get you set for the Jets and the Leafs. That's tonight in Toronto. The nation's eyes on the Winnipeg Jets, because, of course, in the eyes of the nation, it only matters when the Jets play the Leafs. That'll be tonight's contest. But we go back to start the program by looking at Thursday night in Chicago against the Blackhawks. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Manuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com. I say good morning to Dave. I say good morning to Ezzy. I say happy Passover to you both. Happy Passover and happy Easter to all those in our audience who are celebrating this weekend. Let's start with Thursday night's contest in Chicago. Just a fantastic story of a 36-year-old guy getting his 15 minutes of fame.
Yeah, good morning, boys. Happy Passover as well. Yeah, you mentioned, Drew, that you know the Jets don't pick up the win, but this was all about Scott Foster. And I would go as far to say, guys, that this might be the best story of the year in the NHL. It's so rare that you see the emergency backup goaltender play in a game, let alone dress in a game. Mm-hmm. We saw that, about a month back with Zane Kalemba coming in for the Jets. But when you talk about, you know, Scott Foster, not only does he come into the game, he makes a couple of pretty big saves. He makes a big save on Buff, and then Paul Stastny has a really good chance in close. And sure, the game was over at that point, guys. When Foster comes in, it's 6-2, and really, you know, that game is already over. It had been over for quite some time.
It was over.
It was over in the second period.
Yeah.
I mean, I actually thought that the Jets were pretty good in the first period. Sure, they were down a couple of goals, but I thought it was a pretty even period. And you know, in the second period, it got away from them a little bit. But yeah, that game was really all about Scott Foster coming into the third period. He gets the first star. I'm sure that the boys on the Blackhawks took him out for a few drinks after the game, and then he had an amazing story to tell the next day at work, and he's going to have an amazing story to tell for the rest of his life. So one of those awesome feel-good stories. And again, you know, the Jets don't pick up the win, but I think Scott Foster really overshadowed that loss.
I would agree with that. It's a good way of putting it. Overshadowed that loss, Dave. A lot of people, the tweet at us, upset about the Jets' performance on Thursday night against the Blackhawks. My perspective on it is they were sort of primed for a letdown game. You rattle off six in a row at home. You clinch the playoff spot, which you had done earlier in the week against the Nashville Predators. You get to the 100-point mark. It just seemed like Thursday night against Chicago would be a prime opportunity for a letdown game because most of the pressure is now off you. You know you're pretty much locked into second place, not mathematically just yet. Conceivably, the Minnesota Wild, if they were to win out and the Jets were to lose out, could catch the Jets, but nobody expects that to happen. So it just seemed like Thursday night was a prime opportunity for the Jets to have a letdown game. That being said, I don't expect to see the same tonight against the Toronto Maple Leafs.
No, and I agree with you. I think that it kind of had all the makings of a trap game for Winnipeg. And you had a number of players who were coming into the Chicago game, you know, making their NHL debuts. Mm-hmm. And Colin Delia is a player who, you know, we had just seen in Winnipeg earlier that week. He was playing with the Rockford Ice Hogs and led them to a 4-2 win over the Manitoba Moose on the Monday. And he played extremely well. I mean, as far as I was concerned, I mean, I picked him as, I think, the first star of the game because I thought he was excellent. And then you hear that it's getting getting the call up, and you think to yourself, oh, wouldn't that be a funny little, you know, thing if he ends up playing
against symmetry.
Yeah, if he ends up playing against the Jets as well. Of course, it originally was planned that he wouldn't be playing. It was going to be Forsberg, who then was what an odd situation though. I mean, Forsberg is scheduled to play, then is not in warm up. Obviously, Delia goes in and Foster is signed as the emergency backup. But it turns out then Forsberg is out for the rest of the season with season-ending injury.
Yeah,
so
he apparently got injured during the warm-up soccer game that all the teams play.
Yeah, so he's now done for the season. Now, I mean, it sounds significant, but really it's only a couple of weeks, really. So that's not for Chicago. So that's not – but it's still – it was an interesting, unusual situation. But, you know, I think you had guys who wanted to come in and prove that they still had something. You know, these guys have still a lot of pride, and they're not going to just be rolled over. So, although then they got rolled over the next night, so maybe they were. But at the same time, I just think that it was kind of like one of those situations that kind of lended itself not to having Winnipeg having its best game.
Yeah, you make a good point, Dave, because this Blackhawks team, you know, you mentioned it off the top, Drew. I mean, this game had the potential to be a letdown game, and it was in the sense that obviously the Jets didn't win the game. But, you know, you had Dylan Sakura in the lineup. You know, Alex DeBrincat is having an excellent rookie season. Patrick Kane is still one of the best players in the world. I don't care what you're talking about. Dave mentioned, you know, Colin Delia, you know, a prospect in the Chicago Blackhawks system who's had a good year in the American Hockey League and the East Coast Hockey League. And, you know, this team has a lot of pride, and you're playing for jobs, right? We talked about it on Wednesday's show. Mm-hmm. Thomas Yurko's a pending RFA, right? He's trying to earn a job for next year, right? Whether that's with the Blackhawks or not. I think, you know, after, you know, Thursday night's game, he's probably going to get another contract with the Blackhawks. I think Yurko's a good player. So, you know, this Blackhawks team has something to play for. And what they have to play for is playing the role of spoiler. And Drew, you know, Dave mentioned that, you know, the Blackhawks won Thursday night and then lost Friday night. So, you know, obviously it didn't turn into a winning streak, but,
Brent Seabrook's 1,000th game as
exactly.
well.
Exactly.
Just everything was, you know, for a team that's had such a disappointing season in Chicago, everything, the stars aligned on Thursday night for them to have a good performance on home ice, because you have an opponent in the Jets that, I mean, frankly, didn't really need the game, didn't really need to care tremendously, where the Blackhawks, who are grasping at straws for reasons to feel good about themselves, had every reason to come out, you know, strong, you know, just, you know, to do it for Brent Seabrook, who's had obviously a down year, but 1,000 games is 1,000 games, and all the rookies in the lineup and everything else. And actually, the Blackhawks have had a fair bit of success this season against the Jets.
Right, I agree. And, you know, the Jets have 3 games coming up in 4 days, guys, you know, to end this road trip.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to let this snowball into a 2-game losing streak or 3-game losing streak. I mean, they want to ideally win these next 3 games. At the very least, you hope that they win 2 of these 3 games. And that's just because you want to go into the playoffs playing the right way and feeling good about yourself, right? And sure, you're going to have some players rested, I imagine, you know, as the season concludes here. I'm not sure if they're going to rest players on the road trip, but I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, a guy like Brian Little or maybe Mark Scheifele or some of the veteran players who have played a lot and have been dealing with some injuries, you know, get rested. We don't know when. Again, it's not going to happen tonight against Toronto, but with 5 games left, it'll probably happen with, you know, 2 games left or 3 games left. And, you know, Connor Hellebuyck probably isn't going to play all of these games. I imagine you'll see, you know, whether it's Eric Comrie or Steve Mason comes back into the lineup, but the Jets definitely want to rebound with a stronger performance tonight, because let's be honest, I mean, sure, Chicago played really well, but Winnipeg was, I thought, was very disoriented the whole night. And, you know, I mentioned that first period. I thought the Jets came out with some jump. But in the second and third period, I mean, there just wasn't a lot happening. Dennis and Ray Ferraro talked about it on the broadcast. The Jets were just half a step too slow yeah. all night and were having a lot of trouble having any sustained pressure in the Hawks zone. So you definitely want to rebound with a better game tonight.
You're right. All the Jets, I mean, the Jets' goals, the Jets' scoring opportunities were sort of on one-off shots. They weren't on sustained pressure. I mean, Brian Little with the high tip in the slot, and then Scheifele, that just sort of came bang-bang in transition. There wasn't any sustained zone time like we've seen the Jets, especially on that homestand where they trapped some very good teams in their own in the offensive zone for, you know, a minute or 30 seconds on end where they could get sustained pressure and cycle the puck. There was none of that. The Jets were sort of coasting through that game on Thursday night. Again, it's understandable why. It doesn't excuse it, but it's understandable why. And for the Jets, I would be shocked if you saw a similar performance tonight. I think that this the game tonight the national spotlight, the national broadcast, the chance to affirm that the Winnipeg Jets are the best team in Canada as opposed to the Toronto Maple Leafs, who get all the notoriety for the most part, will have a much different Jets team come out. And I do believe that the Jets haven't forgotten. I know it's so many months ago now, but they remember what happened when the Leafs played the Jets in Winnipeg to start the season. The Jets were embarrassed on home ice. I think I have a sinking suspicion that the players will remind themselves of that game and want to have a good statement game against the Leafs, who are sort of in a similar aspect to the Jets in that the Leafs are pretty much locked into that third spot in the Atlantic Division. They clinched the playoff spot earlier in the week. They got to the 100-point mark last night in New York. So it's the second half of back-to-back for the Leafs. I could see the Jets being the team that comes out as a house on fire tonight.
Right, and Toronto's hot right now. They've won, what, 8 of their last 10 games right now? So I agree with you, and I think more so they want to erase the memory of that game 2 nights ago, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, let's be honest, they were smoked by the Blackhawks. I mean, this game was 4-0 at one point, and the Jets made it interesting there in the second period. But, I mean, you lose 6-2 to a Blackhawks team that isn't going to the playoffs. I really think that you want to go into Toronto and you want to have a really strong performance and get back in the win column. And we know that the Jets are finishing second. They've already clinched a playoff spot. But you're right. I mean, this is a measuring stick game for sure.
You go into Toronto. You have the potential to clinch officially second place, depending on what Minnesota does in Dallas tonight. And then the Jets can start to really, you know, strongly work in the rest factor, where they get to rest players on the back-to-back potentially on Monday, Tuesday. Because I think that's really where they're looking to start to be able to rest guys in Ottawa and then Montreal. Because they want to come home, I think, and probably play some of their guys a little bit more on home ice to finish the year. Rest them on that meaningless two-gamer through, in Ottawa and Montreal. And you can only do that, I think, once you officially clinch second spot. You don't want Minnesota to inch up on you anymore. I mean, it's not going to happen. It would be an epic collapse of epic collapses, Dave. But I think the Jets, if they take care of business tonight, then they know the pressure's off for the next 4 games.
Yeah, no, and I think everything factors into this being a much better game than what we saw on Thursday for a variety of reasons. But now you, of course, can use Thursday as motivation in addition to all the other reasons which you guys have talked about. But I think the truth is that, you know, this is a game where you have an understanding as a player that you're going in and there is a national spotlight on you, and you don't want to have that, you know, chance to be embarrassed and, you know, with the entire hockey world watching in theory. So I expect a much better, much closer game. And in addition to the whole Laine versus Matthews and all the other storylines that inevitably come from a Toronto and Winnipeg matchup. So I anticipate at least it being a much different game for Winnipeg and a much better game.
And since Laine and Matthews have come into the league, it seems like every time these two teams play, they're high-scoring affairs. So I wouldn't expect this to be a 2-1 game or a 3-2 game, and that's because, you know, Toronto has scored more goals than almost every other team in the league this year.
Yeah, Toronto has up to 266 goals on the season, which puts them second in the Eastern Conference, only behind the Tampa Bay Lightning, puts them second overall in the entire NHL again. The Jets, of course, with 257 goals, so not far behind. The Leafs like to score a lot. They give up a lot on the back end as well, so it should be an offensively inclined game tonight. When we return, we're going to talk more about the Jets and the Leafs, talk about which of the two teams has a brighter future, which one is more likely to end the curse of the Canadian Stanley Cup drought. Much more on the Jets and Leafs up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
For Joel Armia, and the opening game does not go for the Winnipeg Jets after controlling the early part of period number one with some power plays. Freddie Anderson terrific in goal, and then the Toronto Maple Leafs get three in under 3 minutes in the first period. They add to their lead in the second, and they skate away with a 7-2 win in this contest.
From the opening night of the season.
Doesn't that seem so long ago?
It seems like it was about 10 years ago. I mean, the season can't end. The regular season can't end soon enough. I mean, we've been in this sort of bizarro world where more or less, you know, the Jets are going to finish second, and you've known that for the last 3 weeks, maybe a month.
I feel like the 9 years of Illegal Curve has been a bizarro world.
Well, that goes without saying as well. In any event, it's the regular season, which only mercifully has 5 games left, can't end soon enough. I mean, playoffs, they need to start. Everybody's waiting. I mean, the Leafs have been in a similar position. They've almost been locked into third place in the Atlantic Division for the last 3 or 4 months.
Hold on, Drew. You're telling me that you're not excited for Calgary-Edmonton tonight?
Is that the doubleheader game?
Yep.
Oh, no. I'm not excited to watch the battle of the incompetent Alberta teams. The Rasmus Dahlin battle. I'm not looking forward to watching that game. Much more looking forward, I would suggest, to the second half of the doubleheader on the March Madness contest. But it being Passover, I won't watch either of them.
Go Kansas.
Go Kansas. You're a big Kansas fan now?
Sure.
Sure. Why the hell not? Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you're looking for a place to catch the game, Bernstein's Deli's got the big screen TVs. They have great food and drink specials. It's hashtag Hockey Night at Bernstein's.
When's Aaron going to bring us some latkes in studio?
Aaron being from from Bernstein's?
Yeah.
I don't know. Have you asked them for any latkes?
Nope.
Oh, maybe that would be a good starting point.
You should just assume that we could use some latkes here in studio.
It's true. I mean, I definitely, you know, that's the problem with it being Passover. Normally I stop and get, you know, we get some donuts in here, something to fuel us up for the last couple hours of the program. No donuts, not Passover friendly. So, you know, we're going to maybe have a little low blood sugar as the show goes on here this Saturday morning. Anyways, let's get to the Jets and the Leafs tonight. The Leafs are, you know, certainly an offensively dynamic team, as you can see by the fact that they have 6 players with more than 50 points, including defenseman Morgan Riley. The Jets, obviously, they certainly aren't any slouches on the defensive, on the offensive side as well. I would give the edge, though, the Jets' defense, probably better than the Leafs' offense.
Yep.
I would expect Jacob Trouba to be back in the lineup tonight. It sounds like it, but what Paul Maurice had to say in the last couple days, I think this would be a good opportunity. You know, Trouba wants to get back into the lineup now that he's been cleared from his concussion. I would expect Trouba to get some games in over the next week because this is a guy who hasn't played a lot of hockey since he went out with the injury back in Anaheim in January.
Yeah, the Jets would get a huge boost if Jacob Trouba was able to come back into the lineup for this game. And you know, Drew, you just mentioned Morgan Riley.
Mm-hmm.
For me, this Toronto Maple Leafs team is so talented, they might end up playing Tampa Bay in the first round. And Morgan Riley is a defenseman you know that I've liked for quite some time. And he's having a breakout season. And, you know, you almost are hesitant to say this, but I think he's almost creeped his way into the Norris Trophy conversation. And I'm not kidding. And I think, you know, watching Drew Doughty last night, the game between the Kings and the Ducks, I mean, for me, Drew Doughty is the best defenseman in the league. And then probably second is Erik Karlsson. But, I mean, Morgan Riley, I have no problem saying that he is a top 10, top 15 defenseman in the NHL. If you watch the Leafs on a night-in, night-out basis, I obviously don't, but I watch the Leafs when I can. And Morgan Riley has been phenomenal this year for the Leafs. But really, that is their weakness right now. And, you know, you've got kind of a mixture of veterans and young players. Travis Dermott, he's in his rookie year with the Leafs. I really like him. He can really move the puck. But, you know, you've got the vets like Ron Hainsey and, you know, you've got Roman Polak, who's kind of their seventh defenseman. Nikita Zaitsev, even though this is his second year in the NHL, he's a veteran. He's in his late 20s, right? So, mm-hmm. You know, this Leafs team, I think, is very dangerous. We know how good offensively they are. And, you know, Patrick Marleau, I think, was the perfect player, you know, to complement, you know, this roster of young players, Austin Matthews, Jake Gardner, William Nylander, Zach Hyman. I mean, Tyler Bozak has been centering that third line. James Van Riemsdyk, guys, is making himself a lot of money right now. Scored his 36th goal yesterday.
Yeah.
It's a very dangerous roster. So
we'll talk about JVR and his next contract later on in the program today.
Absolutely. And, you know, it looks like Toronto isn't going to be able to re-sign him, especially when you have, you know, all these young players coming off of their entry-level deals. So, you know, this Leafs team, you know, has been kind of locked into third in the Atlantic Division this year. They thought they were going to play Boston, but the way Boston has played over the last, you know, month and a half, they finally caught Tampa Bay after the Lightning were in that first spot the whole year. So, you know, a very tough test for the Jets tonight. The Leafs play very well at home. We talked about it, and it seems like every night they score three or four goals. And really, you know, Austin Matthews, Patrick Laine is what everyone's going to talk about tonight, Dave, but there are so many other players on the Leafs that you have to worry about.
Well, you know, a lot of symmetry, Dave, between the Leafs and the Jets, I would suggest, in that you have the right mix of young, up-and-coming players. You know, they have Matthews and Marner and Nylander, and the Jets have Connor and Laine and Ehlers, and then you got the veteran guys. They have, you know, Patrick Marleau, you mentioned, and James Van Riemsdyk, and the Jets would have Wheeler and Little, and, you know, I didn't mention Scheifele yet. So the team's just a lot of symmetry between the two teams. The Leafs probably won't, Jets won't see Freddie Anderson in net tonight.
No, it's McElhinney.
It's Curtis McElhinney, yeah, for the Leafs instead. Is the, you know, they're on the second half of the back-to-back after playing last night in New York. Just a lot of symmetry between these two teams. They still have players coming through the pipeline, guys like Kasperi Kapanen, defensemen like Timothy Liljegren, who we haven't mentioned. He was a first-round pick a couple years ago. The Jets have
guys... He should have gone higher than 17.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. The Jets have guys coming through the pipeline. Roslovic going to probably be a healthy scratch tonight, barring any lineup changes. You know, other defensemen coming through, you know, Vesalainen for the Jets, Sami Niku playing great hockey. There's just a lot of symmetry between the Toronto Maple Leafs team and the organization and their future, and I would suggest the Jets and their organization and the future. Bright lights, bright times ahead for both teams, I would suggest.
Well, yeah, and speaking to symmetry and the idea of an opportunity to see both those young groups of young prospects is that the fact that Toronto Marlies are in town right now, mm-hmm. played last night, won a heartbreaker over the Moose with 24.7 seconds to go in the third period, and it was a 2-2 game, and they managed to eke out a 3-2 win from a Moose team that is reeling a little bit right now and could have really used those points. So that's a tough loss for Manitoba. But again, they go at 2 o'clock this afternoon, kind of kick off this battle of Ontario versus Manitoba. So it's an opportunity to see all these young prospects, Mason Appleton, Sami Niku on the Jets side, and as you just listed, a number on the Marlies side. So, that's the true test of a depth of an organization is the fact that, you know, it's not just what you have presently, but it's what you have coming up. Because the fact, as we all know, is that, you know, things can happen, players can get injured, and if you don't have someone who can kind of fill in that spot, then you're in trouble. Not necessarily exactly like, you know, it doesn't matter which player, but I mean, the fact is, you have to be able to have something that's going to come
internal
down.
Internal replacements.
That's right. And so both what I'm getting at is that both these organizations have done a very good job of accumulating those assets to be able to fill those spots when necessary. And, you know, again, the nice thing for both these organizations is that when it's not necessary, you can put these guys down and let them play with the AHL team and get that experience that they need.
And, Dave, I think these two teams, the Jets and the Leafs, of course, are always going to be linked together because in 2016, Austin Matthews went number one, and then you had Patrick Laine going number two. But it's
two guys
more than
that. Two guys that changed the face of each franchise.
Absolutely, generational players, yes. Right? And you know, Austin Matthews obviously wins the Rookie of the Year last year, scores 40 goals, and then you know Patrick Laine finishes second with 36, and then this year obviously Laine has taken a next step in his goal scoring with 43 goals. He can still hit 50 here with five games left. He's got some work to do, but the point is, you know, Drew, you make a good point about the similarities because it's not just Laine and Matthews.
Mm-hmm.
Both of these teams have drafted really well, and you mention it, the Leafs with Mitch Marner and Kasperi Kapanen and William Nylander. William Nylander and Nikolaj Ehlers, I think, are very similar players, very skilled. I think Nikolaj Ehlers is faster than Nylander, but guys with, you know, top 10 talent in the National Hockey League, and then you've got two excellent goaltenders, Freddie Anderson, Connor Hellebuck. Obviously, you mentioned Freddie Anderson's not going to start tonight for the Leafs, but the point is, going into the playoffs, you have those mixtures of veterans and youngsters, and even though the window has just opened for these two teams, I mean, these teams both believe that they can win now, and you saw it a little bit last year with the Leafs taking the Capitals to six games, but when you have players like Patrick Marleau and James Van Riemsdyk and Nazem Kadri, I mean, these are veteran players in the NHL, and they can now elevate this team to the next level. And, you know, we talked about the defense. Sure, the Leafs don't maybe have the best group of defensemen comparative to, you know, a Nashville or even a Winnipeg, But, you know, you look at that Pittsburgh Penguins team last year. I mean, they didn't have any all-star defensemen. You forget, Chris Letang did not play for the Penguins in their cup run last year. Sure, they had Justin Schultz and they had other good defensemen.
You mentioned Ron Hainsey earlier. He was a key member of the Penguins
defense.
But to
me, Morgan Riley's that number one defenseman. So even though, you know, the Leafs, I wouldn't say have a top five, maybe even top 10 D. I mean, Morgan Riley, Jake Gardner, Nikita Zaitsev, Ron Hainsey, Travis Dermott's been a good third pairing defenseman. The Leafs defense is not horrible by any stretch.
If your defense is, you know, can move the puck, and if they can skate it out of their own zone.
And they can.
And just like the Jets defense can, and they might give up a little bit in terms of ideal defensive positioning. They might not be Scott Stevens back there all the time, but that's okay. Because if the puck is at the other end of the ice, if it's not near your goaltender, you don't need to worry so tremendously if your defensive positioning is lacking a little bit. These two teams, there's such similarities between these two teams. I mean, you've got a copy of the Hockey News here in front of you, Ezzy, the Future Watch edition, and it says, plan the parade. Toronto will win the Stanley Cup. It's only a matter of when and how many. And it's not that many years ago where the Hockey News proclaimed that the Jets would win the Cup. What is it, 2019 is when the Jets were going to lift the Cup? Well, I mean, you could certainly foresee the Jets lifting the Stanley Cup in the next couple seasons, depending on how exactly things shake out. And you can definitely see that the Leafs might have to plan a parade in Toronto, given the young talent that's coming through their organization. These two teams, I think, are, you know, right now, they are the best positioned Canadian teams in terms of future success. I know Edmonton has Connor McDavid.
You really went out on a limb on that one, Drew.
Well, but Edmonton's got Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, and they should be up at the forefront of that conversation. The problem is they don't have the management in place right now. That's where they're lacking, whereas the Jets and the Leafs both have a structure and an organization and a plan that leads them, that is leading them down the path to glory.
Speaking of Travis Dermott and Connor McDavid, they played together for the Erie Otters.
Little known fact.
There you go. You're way to bring that one up. Anyways.
You're absolutely right, though, Drew. I mean, these two teams, I think, really have the best chance going forward if you want to talk about, you know, ending the Stanley Cup drought.
Yeah,
because
Canadian
you look at
Stanley
where,
Cup drought.
You know, you look at where Ottawa is and Montreal and, you know, even Edmonton, I would say to a lesser degree. I think Edmonton can turn it around quicker than Ottawa or Montreal. But,
I'd agree.
You know, you look at Calgary. I mean, Calgary's not making the playoffs this year. Where are they going? Because they were a win-now team, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they traded their first-round pick. They traded a second-round pick. And now they're talking about possibly reacquiring a first-round pick, right? So, I mean, this was a team that went out and they acquired Mike Smith and Travis Hamonic and Dougie Hamilton a couple of years ago. So you look at Calgary and you say, well, are they going to have to start to rebuild now?
Yeah. Well, you know, 2023 will be 30 years since the Canadian team last won the Stanley Cup. Obviously, the Canadiens back in 1993.
Shout out to Eric Desjardins, who got a hat trick that year.
There you go. I think it ends before 20. I don't think they go 30 full years. The way the Leafs and the Jets are progressing, I think one of those two teams likely wins the Stanley Cup between now and then. We don't hit a full 30-year drought between Canadian and Stanley Cup winners. Time will tell, of course.
Who wins first, the Bombers or the Canadian hockey team?
I'm not going out on a limb making that prediction. When we come back, Dave Jamieson is going to join us. Dave is with our sister station, TSN Radio in Edmonton. We're going to talk about the disappointing Oilers season and where does that franchise go from here. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have much more on the Jets and the Leafs coming up as well. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom. That's at 982 Portage Avenue, the corner of Portage and Sherwood. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
I'm happy to report that I ordered 5 Scott Foster Chicago Blackhawks jerseys yesterday from Keener Jerseys.
That's a very reasonable number of jerseys to order at one time.
Yep.
I do not foresee that being a regrettable decision.
I also want a Zane Kalemba jersey.
Oh, there you go. Zane Kalemba. You should be the guy, Ezzy, who collects the jerseys of all the emergency goaltenders throughout the league. You can get the New York Rangers McBackup goaltender jersey. You know, Kalemba, Foster. You might be
able to. Joe Calgary for Winnipeg Jets.
Joe Calgary. There you go.
You have to get a Bison's jersey for that one, though.
Yeah. Well, no, but if he was a Jets backup.
He was the Jets emergency backup, though.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend from TSN 1260 in Edmonton, Dave Jamieson, joins us to talk about the Oilers. Dave, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be here, guys.
Dave, obviously we brought you on. It's another disappointing season in Edmonton, another lost season in Edmonton. And, you know, we were talking about this on our Wednesday program, and I'm sure you've been talking about it on your program for weeks and months on end. You know, Where do the Oilers go from here at this point in time? You know, is there confidence in the current group of management that they're the ones who should turn around what has been a disappointing season?
No, I don't believe there is among the fan base. I mean, there's a lot of blowback coming towards Peter Chiarelli because he is the architect of this team, and as he should be, as the general manager. So, but I think what you're starting to see now, at least just in terms of the conversation that, you know, I have on my show, and, you know, you hear people just what they're talking about is now they're starting to openly question Todd McLellan and his use of the roster as it's constructed. Poorly constructed, though it is, you know, the use or lack of use of Jesse Puljujärvi on both power play time and on the top line. People are wondering why, when the season is a complete waste as it is, why are you not just throwing that guy out there? I mean, Pontus Aberg is not the answer to anything. He's getting time with Connor McDavid. So people are now openly questioning how McLellan is coaching this team, which is unfortunate but understandable. I mean, Tom McLellan's a very good coach. He's got the pedigree. You know, Peter Chiarelli can build a good team too, let the record show. It just hasn't happened with this team. And so now what's happened is I believe, and this is saying a lot in Edmonton, 10 years out of the playoffs, this is the most disappointing season in franchise history.
Dave, I wanted to ask you about Ty Ratty, probably not the player that you thought we'd ask you about, because I'm sure that Drew and Dave are going to want to ask you about someone named Connor McDavid and whether he should be a Hart Trophy finalist or winner this year. But, you know, Ty Ratty's a guy who was signed to a one-year contract. He's got into some games here for the Oilers, and he's picked up some goals and points. In your opinion, has he done enough to earn another year another contract with the Oilers for next year?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, and, you know, keep in mind, another year contract doesn't mean you're necessarily playing the whole season, part of the season with the Edmonton Oilers. But yes, I mean, this is an organization sorely lacking in depth, not just at the NHL level, but also in Bakersfield. There, you know, when you look at the great teams and you're in a city with a great NHL team with incredible depth, I mean, I don't know the Manitoba Moose roster well, but whenever I hear people talking about how Winnipeg is built, it's deep. Deep, deep at the NHL and at the minor league level. Nobody says that about the Edmonton Oilers. So Ty Ratty should be here. Whether he's with the Oilers or, you know, on an emergency basis, I don't believe that Ty Ratty, you know, he's 25, 26 years old. I mean, he's not the future of the Oilers, but he's a good stopgap, get you to another player kind of player.
You know, Dave, how disconcerting is that for the organization? Because when you do, you know, you talk about Winnipeg and how they have the depth both within the Jets organization and the Moose, and you look at Bakersfield, who I will see actually later this week here in Winnipeg, and you think to yourself, like, this is a team that's currently last in the Pacific in the AHL. So how disconcerting is that for Edmonton, knowing that if you're going to build this from within, if that is the plan, I mean, what do you really have down in Bakersfield to kind of draw upon?
It should be hugely disconcerting. I mean, this is as god awful as this year has been for the Edmonton Oilers. I mean, that's one thing, and we're very used to having that happen in Edmonton: lack of success, you know, spectacular misfortune, failure, and all the other stuff that comes with 10 years out of the playoffs. Then what's going to happen this year is you know, tell the fan that the future is bright. Right, tell the fan that what we're seeing now is going to get better, and then also, you know, what is the most enduring success for a sports organization is when you can build an entire system that feeds to the big club, right, and that you don't have to rush the maturation of your young players, the stars, and the Oilers. There's a graveyard filled with failed Oiler draft picks, high, medium, and low, of players that just have not developed in this organization. I mean, you know, show me who gets better. Connor McDavid, you could drop him in the middle of the Serengeti. He would find a way to play hockey and be the best in the world at it. The rest of, you know, there, Leon Draisaitl, he is a guy drafted and evolved, but again, he too, likely because of his individual ability, would find a way to be good. I don't look at many players saying, man, this Oilers system really knows how to identify, procure, and then develop players who can play in the NHL. They're just not good at it.
Dave Jamieson, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the disappointing season of the Edmonton Oilers. Dave is the host of the Dave Jamieson Show on TSN 1260 in Edmonton. You know, Dave, we have to ask you, it's the topic of conversation, you know, throughout a lot of different hockey circles as the regular season winds down. If you had a ballot for the Hart Trophy, where does Connor McDavid rank on that ballot for you, given that he's probably been the best player in the league this year, but yeah, does that mean he's been the most valuable player?
Well, see, I tend to look at, and maybe there, you know, and this is another discussion, another show, guys, is whether we need to sort of redefine what the Hart means. Most valuable to his team, certainly, without question. Connor McDavid, I'm trying to think of, as bad as the Oilers are, I'm trying to think how much worse they would be without him, okay? So does he have, would he get a vote of mine? Yes. However, this has been a year, it's actually been a very good year in the NHL, and there's so many great stories. You know, you look at Nathan MacKinnon. Nathan MacKinnon is a brilliant player dragging the rest of his team, and Colorado has talent as well. They're a better team than the Oilers. And they're not far, and they're one season removed from being historically awful. And that's what how quickly it's... how quickly it's gotten good in Colorado. I'd be inclined to go with Nathan MacKinnon for my vote, but, you know, again, I could also make a pretty robust case for Connor McDavid. He's been that kind of brilliant this year.
Dave, I wanted to ask you about Ethan Bear. He scored his first NHL goal recently. He's got into the Oilers lineup because of some injuries on the Oilers' back end. What have you thought of his game so far?
Poised. Doesn't try to do more than he can reasonably do at this point in his evolution. Which sounds funny to talk about a rookie like this. He's a steadying force out there. And I almost like Ethan Bear more for what he doesn't do than what he does do. I'm very impressed with the guy. I think, however, we all have learned a lesson or two watching defense in the NHL. Let's not get too excited too early, but all of the building blocks are there. He's got a good shot. He gets it to the net. That's a struggle for Edmonton defensemen. He's a guy that, you know, don't use a pencil, use a pen when you put his name into the roster for next year. But again, make sure he's paired with somebody, you know, a veteran. Make sure that, you know, that they focus on his development. Again, go back to my previous comment about Oilers, young players, and development. They're not very good at it.
You know, Dave, is there any player on the team that's most excited to have the season end because it's been so forgettable than Milan Lucic? And why do you think it's gone so wrong for him this year?
Oh, God, you'd have to clear the next segment. I mean, I'm a big fan of Milan Lucic. I thought it was a move that signaled that the Oilers were going to do business differently. Listen, now the contract looks hideous. It you know, it's an overpayment in the extreme. I don't know. Some people speculate that he's too heavy, and that doesn't mean fat. It just means that he is a heavy player. That's what got him in the NHL. That's what got him his success in Boston. However, the game has changed. The smaller, lighter player in the NHL is more nimble, is having great success. I mean, this is a game that's changed dramatically since Lucic got in the league. You know, does him going into the off season and reimagining his body, and he comes back 15 pounds lighter, and that's talked about, and he's talked about it. I don't know. I mean, he looks stiff. He looks tentative with the puck. Plays go to his stick and they die. I mean, there's not a lot to say in the positive about Milan Lucic. You know, he's carried himself with level of dignity and professionalism, but the fans don't care about that, right? He's become the butt of jokes here, and it's unfortunate on a sort of just a human level to see that happen to a guy who, by all accounts, is a really good teammate and a good dude.
Dave, a couple of nights ago, the TSN insiders were talking about how some of the Oilers, such as Connor McDavid, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Darnell Nurse, Cam Talbot, could be representing Team Canada at the World Hockey Championship in Denmark coming up. What could the World Hockey Championship and a good showing at the World Hockey Championship do for some of these players who have obviously had a disappointing regular season this year in the NHL?
Well, I mean, if nothing else, it's a real nice way to see Copenhagen and, you know, finish the year, finish the hockey part of the year with something positive. I mean, I think a lot of people are excited to see McDavid and Nugent Hopkins keep doing what they're doing and do it on a big ice surface. And, you know, Talbot has revived his game. There was some tough periods times during this season when he was a mere pale imitation of what he was last year. But it looks like he's got that part of it together, and so I think everybody's less concerned about Cam Talbot going into next year. I mean, if they could have a great performance, good performance, then on a personal level, you know, good, because you want to have at least not a hideous memory in your mind of what hockey was like during, you know, 2017, 2018.
Dave, we'll let you go on this last question. We always appreciate your time here. You know, off-season priorities. There was a clip about a couple weeks ago. Craig Button was on TSN 1050 in Edmonton, and, you know, he was going through, you know, the priorities. You know, first it went from they needed defense to now they needed a winger, and they traded a winger to get defense, and now they need to trade a defenseman or a draft pick to get a winger, and they just, you know, the cycle of despair continues. So what is the number one off-season priority? Is it to get somebody that can play on a regular basis with Connor McDavid? Is it to get somebody who can shore up the back end? Where do they go in the offseason?
Look, what they can do to answer your question succinctly, yes, it's a winger for McDavid and a good one. On defense, the best addition to defense that they can make is to get Adam Larson, who's had a very difficult personal year with the death of his father. He had to leave the team twice, and he hasn't been, you know, nearly as effective as he was last year, and he was effective, let the record show. And to get Oscar Klefbom healthy again and have him playing the kind of hockey he's capable of. That's two guys you've already got here, but if they can make substantive changes to their individual games, the Oilers get better on the back end. Evolution of Ethan Bear, Matthew Benning, also another year in the league. He's had an up-and-down season, and Darnell Nurse has been their best defenseman by some distance. There's enough there that the defense doesn't panic me. They've got to get a winger. They've got to get some scoring depth on the third and fourth lines, and they've got to get a backup goaltender, somebody that can come in and actually make a save and win a game when they need someone other than Cam Talbot to make a save and win a game.
Dave Jamieson is the host of the Dave Jamieson Show on our sister station, TSN 1260 in Edmonton. Dave, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, guys.
Take care, Dave. When we come back, we talk more about the Winnipeg Jets. Is this the best Jets team regular season performance in 1.0 or 2.0 history? Talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Forsberg on the year, 2-for-9, and has to score to extend the shootout. Forsberg to the left, in on Hellebuyck. Forsberg to the forehand. Connor Hellebuyck to save. The Winnipeg Jets win it 5-4. And for the second time since returning to Winnipeg, the Winnipeg Jets have qualified for postseason play. 102 points on the year as they defeat the Nashville Predators 5-4. 46th win of the year, and the Jets will go to the playoff dance.
The one and only Dennis Bayak with that call from last Sunday's game against the Nashville Predators, the game the Jets clinch a playoff spot, as we all know, will do battle starting on April either 11th or 12th, likely, when the playoffs get underway. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live here on TSN 1290, and this segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Drew, we should mention Dave McCarthy of NHL.com confirms Curtis McElhinney will start in net for the Leafs tonight versus
there you
the
go.
Jets.
No surprise there whatsoever, but we will update you throughout the course of the program on any roster changes or lineup decisions for the Winnipeg Jets and the Toronto Maple Leafs. As we all know, Jets 47 wins on the season, 104 points and counting with five games to go on the season. Certainly a good possibility that they'll hit the 50-win mark, which is a magical mark not yet seen in this city by any team in the NHL. Didn't take the WHA out of the equation. But looking back at Winnipeg Jets 1.0, the NHL version, Winnipeg Jets 2.0, is this the best regular season performance by a hockey team in Winnipeg going back to 1979?
I think so. And when you look at that 1984-85 team that went to the second round, right? Was that...
Yeah.
That it was the 84-85 team.
It was the 84-85.
You had some pretty darn good players. I mean, you had future Hall of Famer Dale Hawerchuk on that team. You had Thomas Steen on that team, Paul McLean. I mean, there were a lot of good players on that team. And, of course, we know the Jets could never really get out of that second round because there was a little team called the Edmonton Oilers that featured Wayne Gretzky, Mark Messier, Paul Coffey, Jari Kurri. The list goes on and on and on. But, I mean, for me, what really clinches it, Drew, is the way this team has played at home. We talked about it on Wednesday's show. You have won 30 of 39 games at home. That's almost 80% of your games at home.
Mm-hmm.
You've won 80% of your games at home. To me, is just remarkable. And sure, the Jets have been a little bit below 500 on the road here, but the Jets still do have three games left on the road, and they can change that a little bit. But the Jets' sheer dominance at home and the amount of goals that they've scored at home, they have blown teams out. And we're not talking about, you know, bad teams. They've blown out some really good teams. I mean, they've owned the Dallas Stars this year.
Mm-hmm.
They've owned the Minnesota Wild this year. You remember that game against Florida? They smoked them. I mean, there are at least, I would say, a dozen, maybe 12 to 15 games where the Jets won by at least two or three goals and scored more than four goals in the game, right? So for me, when you look at, you know, the totality of this year, you know, what Patrick Laine has done, 43 goals, Blake Wheeler is having a career year. I mean, Mark Scheifele's obviously had the injury problems, but he's been a point-a-game player for the Jets. Kyle Connor, he's on the cusp of scoring 30 goals in his rookie year. Nikolai Ehlers is having a fantastic year. He's taken another step in his development. The defense, I mean, this is the best group of defensemen the Jets have ever had, and you know, I think you've seen that with Jacob Trouba, Toby Enstrom, Dmitry Kulikov out of the lineup. They're able to put in Joe Morrow and Tucker Poolman. And I think Joe Morrow and Tucker Poolman have done an excellent job. So for me, this is unquestionably the deepest team the Jets have had in the 7 years since they've been back from Atlanta. But when you're talking about comparing those two teams, it's always tough when you're comparing, you know, one team from, what, 33 years ago versus a team now. But,
yeah.
I mean, when you look at that skill that you can put out on a night-in, night-out basis, Dave. We talked about it. I mean, how many first-round picks do the Jets have in their lineup right now? What is it, 10? I mean, there's so much talent. So, for me, this has been the Jets' best regular season ever in 1.0, 2.0 history.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think, if, you know, they're three wins away from hitting, you know, 50 on the season. I mean, that's a fairly significant number. So it's hard. You know, we always have a tendency to look at what's in the present or
recency
the recent past,
yeah,
as opposed to, you know, long term. And it's hard to think, you know, that there has been a better team that has worn the Winnipeg Jets brand than this one, really, because we've seen it. And you know, I think as the key for me, at least, is what you've touched on, which is the depth. I think, you know, you've seen big major players go out for a long period of time, and the team doesn't miss a beat, right? You lose your top center. Blake Wheeler shifts over and does what he did, and the Jets went on that run. You know, you lose Jacob Trouba. You think the team's going to take a big step back. They haven't. So to me, that's the key, is the fact that this team has the depth that they do within the organization to, you know, like I said, call up a Jack Roslick or get the performances that you got out of Patrick Laine, young guys like Laine and Ehlers and Kyle Connor. So, yeah, I mean, to my mind, it's hard to remember a team that's been as good as this one that we're seeing right now.
And I didn't even mention Connor Hellebuck. I mean, Connor Hellebuck, 40 wins. He started, 61 games this year. And, I mean, for me, I think he's the best goaltender the Jets have ever had. And he's just getting started, right? 24 years old. So, and we haven't even mentioned that. I mean, Connor Hellebuck, whether or not he's a Vezina Trophy finalist, let's be honest, guys. I mean, he definitely deserves to be in the conversation. But right now, I mean, Pekka Rinne, Andre Vasilevsky, I mean, there are other goaltenders that he's competing against.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that's just icing on the cake. And I think Connor Hellebuck would tell you that himself. Obviously, he'd love to be a Vezina Trophy finalist and win the Vezina Trophy, but he'll take the 40 wins in a playoff spot any day of the week.
Certainly. Paul Wiesek made an argument in today's paper. I disagree with Paul's argument, but he articulated it pretty well, that Connor Hellebuck should be in the running for the Hart Trophy, never mind just the Vezina Trophy. I don't think that's obviously going to happen, but it was an interesting discussion point at the very least.
Yeah, and, you know, I can see that argument, but, you know, for me, guys, it has to be Blake Wheeler. I mean, what Blake Wheeler has done this year, I mean, he hasn't had one off game. So for me, I mean, I realize I can understand the argument from Paul Wiesek, but, I mean, for me, Blake Wheeler this year has been unquestionably the heart and soul, the MVP of this team, night in, night out. I mean, he's creating offense. I mean, we know he's having a career year offensively, but it's just the way he puts this team on his back. But hey, Connor Hellebuck has been definitely valuable as well.
You could say, you know, almost that Hellebuck is the, you know, I wouldn't make this argument, but I can understand it, that Hellebuck might be the most valuable player, but that Blake Wheeler is almost the pulse of the team. In that,
yeah, I'd agree with that.
You know, yep. In that, you know, he is the driving force behind the team. Sure, the team wouldn't be as successful if Connor Hellebuck was average this year, or if the Jets had seen, you know, similar goaltending to how they've seen the previous years that they've been here back in Winnipeg. But Blake Wheeler certainly is the pulse of the team, and everybody looks to him as the North Star for the team's performance.
He's a top right winger in the league, and mid-season he moved to center, and his production didn't slip. I mean, find me one other player that's done that in recent memory.
It really is remarkable. I mean, this whole, you know, Jets season, the regular season, as we've mentioned, you know, with five games to go, it's been probably the best in Winnipeg Jets history. The question will be, of course, the playoffs, and the fact that, you know, yet again, it's remarkable. Every time the Jets have a dominant team, they run into another dominant team. Like it was with the Oilers back in the 80s, they run into another dominant team in their division, this year it being the Predators, and the Jets will have to try and climb over that hurdle like they tried to climb over the Oilers hurdle back in the mid-80s. When we return, we're going to be joined by Michael Trakos of Post Media. He covers the Maple Leafs. We'll talk more about the Jets and the Leafs, the national broadcast, the big game tonight in Toronto. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter. You can send us your tweets if we like them enough. We may even read them on air. You can follow us on Instagram. Some great photos from our photographers at both the Jets and Moose games. Just search for Illegal Curve on Instagram. And of course, our website that's got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
The battle for Canada takes place tonight in Toronto as the Leafs and the Jets will do battle. We're joined by Michael Trakos of Post Media to talk about the Leafs, talk about the game. Michael, good morning. How are you?
Hey, pretty good. I guess we're getting a preview of the Stanley Cup final, right?
Yeah. Gary Bettman.
I don't know if it's this year or next year, though.
Well, you know, Gary Bettman's national nightmare, if that ends up being the case. But you could certainly make the argument for it. I don't expect it to happen. I think there's teams in both conferences that are slightly better than both the Jets and the Leafs. But, you know, if there's a handful of Stanley Cup contenders, and there's probably maybe six, I would suggest, in the entire league, I think you have to include the Jets and the Leafs among that group of contenders.
And yet, I would agree with you. And yet, I wouldn't expect, or I wouldn't be surprised if either one actually bows out in the first round. I think that's how dangerous this first round can potentially be for both teams, and just really all around the league. Toronto looks like it's going to match up against Boston. Or Tampa Bay, so pick your poison, really. And with I guess the Jets are going to face Minnesota, who hasn't been a terrible team by any stretch of the imagination this year. So, you know, it's the two, obviously the only two Canadian teams that are going to be in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and yet I don't know, is this the best chance that Canada has had in recent memory? Possibly so, the way that the Jets are playing and with how hot Frederik Andersen has been for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Michael, a couple of days ago in your NHL notebook for National Post, you had an article about the Maple Leafs, specifically Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and their next contracts, and you argued that, you know, they should sign identical contracts. Do you expect that to happen as soon as the season ends, and how many years should we expect both of these two players to sign for?
Yeah, it's funny because I got a lot of backlash saying, like, oh, how could you pay Marner the same as Matthews? If the Leafs do that, they're really going to be in a tough spot. And I'm not saying that's an ideal situation for Toronto, because I think ideally they'd love to have Matthews making a little bit more and Marner slotted in, probably around what Nylander is going to be making. And yeah, it just poses such a tough question, because when you look at their stats, they've been fairly similar. It's almost kind of like a Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane kind of scenario. But I think that's when we're kind of looking ahead, not just with the Leafs, but with the Jets too. When you do have young teams and you have guys like Laine and Ehlers and now Kyle Connor really kind of emerging as legit stars, well, stars get legit money. And it's going to be kind of hard to keep rosters intact. And I think that's why I've made this argument many times before, that this could be the deepest and most balanced Leafs team in the next 5 years, just because you do have three guys on entry-level contracts and you still have a James Van Riemsdyk. You've got a Leo Komarov. You've got a Tyler Bozak. You have a lot of players that you're probably not going to have in the next couple years. And, you know, Winnipeg's probably going to find themselves in a similar scenario when they do have to start paying Line A and Kyle Connor, like I said, big-time money. And that's why maybe this window, although it looks like it's huge because both teams do have a lot of young players, it can close in a hurry, in the sense that you're not going to have that depth that you did have this season or even last.
Now, Michael, usually after a guy has a great rookie season, there's an adjustment, sometimes a sophomore slump. This season, you wrote that there hasn't really been that sophomore slump we've seen in that from the rookie class last year. To what would you attribute that?
Man, these guys are just so good. I think the days of maybe a guy coming into the league being a bit maybe of an unknown commodity and just having that kind of one spectacular year and then just not being able to follow it up. Well, these guys are like, you know, Laine and Matthews are arguably two of the best players, not just young players, but two of the best players in the NHL right now. And then you look across the board and a guy like Mitch Marner, who doesn't maybe get as much publicity as Matthews does in the city, but he's been every bit as good. I think since February 1st, only like six players have more points than him. And really, I think it's a testament just to how young the league is going right now, where these young guys aren't having to pay their dues. And we're not seeing them go, okay, well, in your first year, you're getting a bit of ice time. Your second year, now it's a bit of a jump. Now you're playing against the top pairing, top defense pairing. Well, last year, Laine was facing top defense pairing. This year, he's facing top defense pairing. There's no change in that regard. If there's only a change, it's the fact that this guy probably packed on 10 pounds of muscle in the offseason and is still really scratching the surface as to how good he can be. And I think that goes all across the league, whether it's a Mikko Rantanen, a Sebastian Aho, or a Braden Point, guys like that. So, yeah, we are kind of in a weird era here where it seems like you're playing your best hockey in your early 20s versus maybe 10 years ago, where it was the guys who were in their late 20s who were really making that kind of impact.
Michael Trakos is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Michael's the national hockey writer for Post Media. The Jets and the Leafs do battle tonight in Toronto. Michael, you look at the Leafs' pending list of unrestricted free agents, and there's some names on there that, you know, guys who are key members of the team for the last five or so seasons. JVR, James Van Riemsdyk, has 36 goals on the season. Tyler Bozak has, you know, been a quality center for the Leafs. Leo Komarov certainly been a ferocious forechecker and an all-around pest. Of those three players, do you expect the Leafs to re-sign any of the three?
Maybe Bozak. With Komarov, I'll just go through them, but with Komarov, there seems to be a lot of guys from the minors, whether it's a Kasperi Kapanen, Andreas Johnsson, or there's a couple other guys that really kind of can play the check-in role that he's played. So I see him more of an expendable part, and you know what? He's getting a little bit older, and he has kind of lost a step, and not the offensive player that he was once a year, maybe 2 years ago. Van Riemsdyk, I think, has really priced himself out of this market. Good on him. You know what? When you go into your UFA year, sometimes it can go good, sometimes it can go bad. Well, this guy's putting up career numbers. And you know what? When you look back on him, he's always good for about 30 goals. So he's going to get paid. Not going to be in Toronto just because they can't fit him in now that they have Patrick Marleau. But Tyler Bozak is the interesting one. If they really want to bring him back as a third line center, he's not going to cost a whole lot. He is what he is, which is a guy that can win faceoffs, a guy that can kind of play up and down your lineup. You can play in your power play. You can play it. You can score a shootout goal if need be. You can even kill penalties. So he's a guy that I think at maybe $3.5 to $4 million range would be a perfect fit in Toronto. If not, if maybe he's looking to go test the waters and play in another city. But he seems happy here, and it doesn't seem like he's going to be that hard of a guy to kind of bring in, especially when you think of the Leafs really are heavy on the wing, but they're not really heavy down the middle unless they're thinking about maybe putting Wheeler and Nylander down the middle next season. So a guy like Bozak is the perfect guy to bring back in my mind.
Mike, Travis Dermott's a defenseman that always impresses me when I watch him, and I know there are a lot of Leafs fans that were clamoring for Dermott to be recalled from the Toronto Marlies earlier than he was. And when you look at, you know, that Leafs team that lost to the Capitals in the first round last year, they barely lost to the Capitals in the first round last year. Is this what the Leafs back end desperately needs, an infusion of youth and speed?
Yeah, and you know what? The other big piece, I think, this season, aside from Dermott, was Ron Hainsey. Really has settled down Morgan Rielly on that defense pair. Has allowed Morgan to kind of take more chances offensively. And you saw what he did with Pittsburgh in the playoffs. He was, with Letang out, he was their best defenseman. But yeah, definitely Travis Dermott is another guy that he just skates so well. He's so confident with the puck. And we're really kind of just seeing the beginnings of what he can be because he's only 21 years old. So, yeah, you know what? I think Nikita Zaitsev and maybe Jake Gardner have maybe taken a half a step backwards, but with the additions of Hainsey and Dermott, you don't really notice it. And you know, like, I think the defense still kind of gets criticized in this market for being the one weak spot on the team, but you know, they move the puck well. They all skate well, aside from maybe Roman Polak, and they all seem to kind of know their role. You don't see guys really trying to play outside themselves. Like, if you're a Travis Dermott, yeah, I think he's kind of figured out like what works in a Mike Babcock system, and he's not trying to be that offensive superstar. He's just trying to be make simple passes, get to the pucks early, close gaps, and you know what? Maybe year two, he kind of stretches those kind of offensive muscles, and he becomes more of a stud that way. But right now, he's playing a perfect role for this team.
You know, earlier this week, you wrote an article. You made a case for 10 players for the Hart Trophy. And every time I would read the next player, I would be like, okay, that's a good reason. I'll go with that guy. And then I would read the next one. I'd be like, okay, well, I'll go with that guy. After writing this, like, who does your gut tell you is the winner of the Hart Trophy this year?
Funny, after that one, I got a lot of calls or a lot of emails saying, hey, you left off Eric Staal. Or what about Cooley? Or what about that defenseman? And I thought I was narrowing it down to 10. Maybe I put too many names up there, but you know, I probably could have went to 15 or 16 guys. And as for who's my leader right now, well, it changes almost every day, guys. Like, I don't know about you, but if Colorado gets in, Nate McKinnon for sure. If they don't get in, I still can make a really good case that this guy has just been outstanding. And without him, they'd be probably the first best team in the league. After that, I think I've got Malkin 2 and McDavid 3. And you know, if you had asked me if McDavid was going to be a finalist 2 weeks ago, I would have said no way. The team is too bad. You have to be at least a playoff team or maybe even a point or two out to be considered a Hart Trophy finalist. But, well, how can you ignore a guy that's put up 103 points and really since the All-Star break has just been completely on fire in terms of point production? And when you look at that Edmonton team, there's not a whole lot of pieces that you like up front, maybe aside from Leon Draisaitl. So the fact that McDavid is doing it with guys like Ty Ratty is even more spectacular in my mind.
Michael Trakos, our guest on the Legal Curve Hockey Show, discussing the Leafs and the Jets, looking at the NHL in general. Michael, the Leafs, obviously, they've clinched their playoff spot. They played last night in New York. They don't really have anything to play for entering into tonight's game, given that it's they're pretty much locked into third spot in the Eastern Conference. Are you expecting it to be a letdown contest? Do you think there's the potential for that? Or do you think that, you know, from my perspective here in Winnipeg, I think that both these teams, you know, sort of know that they are the pride of Canada, battling for the title of best team in Canada, and there might be a little bit more energy than would typically be on a game where both teams are just getting ready for the playoffs?
No, I agree with a lot. I think there's there's a lot of juice to this game. I think whenever you've got a Canadian team versus another, there's a lot of buzz in the city. And, you know, Mike Babcock keeps stressing, and the players keep stressing, that they don't really want to back into the playoffs and sort of stumble their way in. They really want to go with all systems kind of rolling. And I think that's why Fredrik Andersen has received, or he's really started, I think, the last seven straight games. So if it was the case that they were just kind of coasting, you'd see Andersen get rested a little bit more. Obviously, he's not going to play tonight because it's the second of back-to-back. But really, they want Austin Matthews to be on fire. They want Mitch Marner to be cooking. They want all their guys to be on a roll as the playoffs start so that you've got everyone working together. And, you know, like when you look at the Leafs game recently, like the Islanders game last night was a bit of an ugly win. The Florida one was the same kind of deal. This isn't a team that's really been playing a complete 60-minute game, and I think that's one of the things that they're trying to stress is they need to start on time, as Mike Babcock says, but they also have to finish strong as well. And they haven't really had both kind of components working well lately. So I think this is going to be another one where they're saying, okay, this is a playoff team. This is a definitely Stanley Cup contender. Let's see what they can do against the Jets tonight.
Mike, just so you know, I just tweeted out, Michael Tracco says that Connor McDavid should not be a Hart Trophy finalist.
Oh, thanks.
We also gave him your personal cell number so he can send the hate directly to you via text message.
Oh, geez. You know what? It's funny. It's like the amount of hate I've been receiving from across the country. Like I said, five teams that need to win the first overall pick, and I didn't include Vancouver. And you think that'd be like a positive thing, like they don't necessarily need the number one pick, and yet, oh no, how could you leave Vancouver out? So, you know what, there's a lot of passion in the city, or across the country right now, in terms of their teams.
You might be public enemy number one right across the country, but you're number one in our hearts here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Michael. We'll see you in June for the Stanley Cup Final.
Hey, yeah, that's definitely true. I don't know, is it this June or next June? We'll have to figure it out.
We'll have to figure that out. Michael Tracos of the Post Media of the National Post, he's going to cover tonight's Leafs-Jets game. You can read all about it later on. Michael, thanks for joining us this morning.
All right, thanks, boys.
Take care, Mike. When we come back, we discuss a busy, crucial Friday night in terms of the Western Conference playoff race. 1 week to go. Four teams, three playoff spots. Who's going to be on the outside looking in? That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
And now, excuse me, it was Kasha lays it all the way back to Montour. And the Kings had four men on the ice for quite a while. Here's Raquel into the zone, pulls it in. He scores!
Rickard Rackel, Drew.
Yes, that's, I believe, how he pronounces his name, or Rickard Rackel, one or the other.
How great of a pick was that in our hockey pool, by the way?
I don't know. Who took him?
I did.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
How you doing in the hockey pool? Am I dead last?
No.
No?
Yeah, I think you're doing okay.
Oh, really?
Like, neither of us are winning.
Oh, okay.
But I think we're, like, middle of the pack.
Hey, middle of the pack.
Actually, middle of the pack in a hockey pool is the worst. You either want to win it or finish really low.
Why?
In my opinion. I don't know. What do you get for being in middle of the pack?
At
least if you're, you know, last, you get the toilet bowl.
Such a thing doesn't exist, though.
Yeah. In March Madness brackets. In the March Madness pool I'm in, if you finish last, you actually get your money back.
Oh,
for,
really?
For being so atrocious.
Oh. Well, that's not the case in your hockey pool, though.
No.
Yeah, so nobody gets anything for finishing dead last.
No.
All righty. Good talk there. That was Rickard Rackel scoring for the Anaheim Ducks last night. A 2-1 victory in overtime against the LA Kings. It was a crucial Friday night in terms of the Western Conference playoff race. 1 week to go. Four teams. The Colorado Avalanche, the Los Angeles Kings, the Anaheim Ducks, and the St. Louis Blues. Four teams doing battle for three playoff spots. One of those teams is going to be on the outside looking in come next Saturday night, when, of course, there is the game next Sunday, but that's only Eastern Conference. That's the Bruins and the Panthers. The Western Conference playoff race coming down right down to the wire. Last night, the Avalanche get the victory at home against the Chicago Blackhawks. Of course, a costly victory as they lose Semyon Varlamov. Unclear as to how long he's going to be out of the Avalanche lineup, if he's going to miss any time at all. He did leave the game. Jonathan Bernier came in. They combined for a shutout against the Blackhawks. Avalanche are feeling great about themselves. All they're saying is, we don't want any three-point games. involving our opponents doing battle for the playoff spots. Well, lo and behold, that's all they got. St. Louis went into Vegas. They lost in overtime to the Golden Knights, so that's a three-point game.
Shout out to Thorbs for his beauty goal.
Shout out to Chris Thorburn. He gets his first goal of the season, his revenge against his former Vegas Golden Knights teammates. Very briefly teammates, of course, but he scores for the Blues to get them into overtime. And then between L.A. and Anaheim, that's another three-point game. The Ducks beat the Kings there. Each team, or the Kings getting the 1 point there in third place in the Pacific Division.
I don't know if you guys caught any of that game, but are there two teams that hate each other more than the Kings and the Ducks?
I watched a fair bit of that game, and no, there was certainly some playoff intensity, as you might expect in that contest.
Dion Phaneuf and Richie going at it, that was great.
The Kings have only three games left this week. It's going to be a very quiet week for them. What they have going to their advantage, though, is that those three games are all at home, where the LA Kings have been very good this season. They have Colorado at home on Monday, they have Minnesota at home, and then they finish the season at home against Dallas next Saturday. The Anaheim Ducks, they have four games. Three of them are at home, one of them on the road. The problem that the Ducks have is that they have none of the tiebreakers. They only have 36 regulation and overtime wins, so they have to clearly get in ahead of any of the other teams by points. They won't win any of the tiebreakers.
And that's why that win was so big last night.
Huge for them against the Kings. They have Colorado on Sunday night. That's a massive game, obviously. They have Minnesota. They have Dallas. And then they finish the season at Arizona. You know, usually you'd think that might be an easy win, but the Arizona Coyotes have been playing some very good hockey as of late. Antti Raanta, I don't know if you guys have seen his numbers in the last couple months. He's been fantastic in net for the Coyotes over the last 6 or 8 weeks of this season. So not going to be an easy game for the Ducks to win at the last game of the regular season on the second half of a back-to-back going into Arizona.
I said that on Wednesday's show, though. Like, if you're an Arizona Coyotes fan, you're not liking these wins.
Yeah, but the players play. Fans cheer against wins, players play.
But you're just making your chances worse of getting the first overall pick.
Yeah, c'est la vie. You can't control that. What are you going to do?
I'm just saying. I mean, these wins, Antti Raanta is playing great, but where was this back in November?
You're right.
Or December?
You're absolutely right. He was injured for a while earlier in the year, but you're right. Winning games after the season is a lost cause isn't so great, but you know he's making some money for himself. He's an unrestricted free agent at season's end, and his numbers over the last 40 games have been terrific.
Yeah, he's a good goalie.
Yeah. St. Louis, they lost last night in Vegas, as I mentioned, in overtime. They have a second half of a back-to-back tonight in Arizona. Then they go home to play the Capitals and the Blackhawks and then head back out on the road for a back-to-back to finish the season at Chicago and at Colorado next Saturday. Certainly could be a play-in game between the Blues and the Avs next Saturday night. And then the Avalanche, they're on the outside looking in right now, despite being tied with the St. Louis Blues and only a point behind the Anaheim Ducks in the wild card battle. They're at Anaheim Sunday, at the Kings on Monday, at the Sharks on Thursday, and then home to St. Louis to wrap it up on Saturday. Ezzy, of those four teams, which are the three teams that are going to be playoff bound next Saturday night?
I'm leaning towards the Kings, the Blues, and the Ducks right now. And I think when you look at the Blues schedule, you mentioned it, Drew, they have more games left than anybody. Mm-hmm. And when you consider they've got a couple of games against Chicago, and then, as you mentioned, their next game is at Arizona, I think not only do they have more games, it's probably the easiest schedule out of these four teams,
certainly.
Right?
So only one game against a current playoff team, that being the Monday game against Washington.
Right, and Colorado's been a great story. I mean, we've talked about it earlier this year on the show. I mean, Jared Bednar has done an excellent job with the Colorado Avalanche. Obviously, Nathan MacKinnon stands out as having, you know, the career year and probably being a Hart Trophy finalist if the Avalanche get into the playoffs, or maybe he's still a finalist if they don't. But when you consider that with four games left, not only are three of those games against the teams we're talking about here, you've got Anaheim, LA, and St. Louis, but three of those games are on the road.
Three road games.
So for me, that's the bigger question, because Colorado has not been good on the road this year.
Right, and all four of their remaining games are against playoff teams.
Right.
They have the hardest.
Or teams that are battling for a playoff spot.
Well, St. Louis currently in a playoff spot, but they have the hardest of the schedule remaining, all four against playoff teams, three of them on the road. So if the Avalanche are going to get in, they will certainly have earned their way in. I guess what the Avalanche have going for them is they sort of control their own destiny in some regard, in that if they win these games, they are beating their primary opponents for those playoff spots.
Right, and you mentioned the Anaheim-Colorado game coming up. I mean, for me, if one of those two teams is able to get a clean 2 points, I mean, that's going to be huge, because when you look at the rest of the schedule, we talked about it. I mean, Colorado has some tough games coming up against teams that are in playoff spots right now, and then, you know, you've got San Jose, so maybe you catch a break, Drew, because, you know, San Jose is locked into a playoff spot. I don't know if they've clinched, but they're locked in.
They have not clinched, but they're more than likely going to finish
second.
They're going
to clinch soon.
Yeah, they're going to clinch soon. And
They're going to make the playoffs.
They're going to clinch soon. They're going to finish second in the Pacific Division.
So maybe you catch a break there if you're Colorado and you face a Sharks team that's going to rest some players.
Yeah.
But you've still got St. Louis in that last game of the year, and St. Louis could still be trying to clinch a playoff spot. This might go down to next weekend. So when you're talking about, you know, the schedules, clearly Colorado's got the toughest schedule coming up, and then, you know, St. Louis with the extra game has the easiest schedule. But if you're the LA Kings, you've still got to play Colorado. You've still got to play Minnesota. And then, you play Dallas, who is not a playoff team this year, but maybe Dallas plays the role of spoiler. So for me, I'm going to go with the Kings, the Blues, and the Ducks.
Yeah, the Kings are sort of in an enviable position, Dave, in that they only have 3 games left, but those 3 games that they have, they're going to be well-rested. They're going to play a Minnesota Wild team that's likely going to have clinched a playoff spot at that point in time, as the Wild play at Dallas tonight, and they have Edmonton at home on Monday. They're at Anaheim on Wednesday. So it's second half of a back-to-back game for the Wild when they play the Kings, who are going to be sitting there for 3 days waiting for them. So the Kings are in an enviable position. There's no reason for the LA Kings not to win out with their 3 games left and get to that 100-point mark. You know, home to Colorado, it'll be the second half of a back-to-back for Colorado. Home to Minnesota, it'll be the second half of a back-to-back against Minnesota. And then home to Dallas, it'll be the second half of a back-to-back against for the Dallas Stars.
What about this, guys? I mean, if you're the Nashville Predators, right, and you're sitting at, what are they at, 111 points now?
Yes.
And you're going to end up playing maybe the LA Kings or the Anaheim Ducks or the St. Louis Blues in the first round. I mean, these are all teams that have had playoff success as of late, right? So, I mean, St. Louis obviously has not won the Stanley Cup, but they've gone far.
Second round.
Well, yeah, and you're talking about, you know the LA Kings, who have won a couple Stanley Cups in the last 6 years, and then we know the Anaheim Ducks year after year, they just can't seem to get out of that Western Conference Final. And so, I mean, that's not a great first-round matchup if you're the Nashville Predators. And don't get me wrong, I think the Preds are the best team in the Western Conference and probably the entire league, but I mean, you're talking about, you know, Jonathan Quick, one of the best goalies in the league. Drew Doughty, I think he's going to win the Norris this year. Anze Kopitar, I mean, we know he's having a career year, just hit 90 points. So I don't think you want to play the Kings or the Ducks. Maybe the Blues is the team that you want to play there. But we know how much firepower the Blues have right now. And, you know, it's incredible what they've done here since they traded Paul Stastny. What have they won, 8 of their last 10 games here? So I don't think any of these teams are a pushover in the first round.
No, none of them are. All the pressure's off the Blues, and they're playing like a team with no pressure on them and no expectations, and that might be why they've propelled them to some success as of late. Dave, quickly, who are your, you know, of these 4 teams, who do you think's on the outside looking in next Saturday night?
Probably Colorado, I guess.
Colorado, you don't think that their schedule, the loss of Varlamov, whatever else might eventually is going to catch up to them?
That's what Dave Minuk is. He's short and concise.
There you go, short and concise.
We have a minute left, so.
When we come back, we're going to talk to Isabel Kershedian of the Washington Post, talk about the Capitals. They're still atop the Metropolitan Division, not getting a lot of love when it comes to the Stanley Cup contenders list, though. Talk to Isabel about the Caps and if their performance deserves more respect than they currently are getting. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.